You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. August 1st, that's the date when the Miami Heat play basketball again. That's when the schedule is set to resume. At least that's how things are currently set. On Friday night, the NBA released the schedule of the 8 regular season games for each of the 22 teams participating in Orlando for the bubble playoff system that's set to take place. The first game of the season again, Saturday, August 1st, against the Denver Nuggets. That game's scheduled for 1 p.m. 2 days later, they take on the Toronto Raptors, then the Boston Celtics, then the Milwaukee Bucks, Phoenix Suns, Indiana Pacers, Oklahoma City Thunder, and the Indiana Pacers. So they play the Pacers twice, obviously. That last game is on August 14th, and the time for it is still to be determined. All the other games are set all over the place. The first game against the Nuggets is for 1 p.m. The next game against the Raptors is set for 1:30, then 6:30 the following day. So it's all over the place. Anyway, the actual season is going to be beginning a couple days earlier on June 30th. So that's when the first games of the season will take place. And then Miami's first game begins on August 1st. The immediate takeaways are that the Heat play a back-to-back set. So they play the Raptors on the 3rd, and then the following day, the Celtics. I know a lot of people are already saying, well, every time we face the Celtics this season, it's been on the second night of a back-to-back set. Yeah, I guess that's true. I'm not sure how that kind of plays into the factor here as far as who Boston is playing the day before. Most of these games have a two-day break in between. I think every team has a back-to-back set. It's unrealistic to think that within 2 weeks you could squeeze 8 games of play. And look, this has been a scheduling nightmare from everything we've heard from people at the top at the NBA level. Everything I've asked about from people who have inside information about the scheduling process, it was a chore to try and come up with this. The games don't follow the same pattern that the original schedule was supposed to have. Originally, Miami was supposed to have not only just a number of teams that they were going to be, you know, sub 500 teams, but there was going to be, you know, games against Boston that were played the Celtics twice. Their matchup versus the Toronto Raptors was actually the last game of the season. Now that's no longer the case. As far as the sub 500 teams that Miami was originally going to play, again, they were going to play the Knicks, the Hornets, the Bulls. I think they were going to play the Knicks twice, actually. Now the only team that's below 500 is the Suns, and even they, you know, will be playing for a playoff seed and doing everything they can. So this is a very difficult schedule. From what people have kind of looked at the original strength of schedule based on the team's records prior to the hiatus, Miami has what's considered the fourth toughest schedule among all 22 participants. So, you know, again, that takes into consideration what the teams were like, what their records were like beforehand. Obviously, the Nuggets and Bucks are, you know, contenders. The Raptors still also a contender. You've got the Celtics who are playing, you know, very well, and only the Suns are a sub 500 team. You've got a team like the New Orleans Pelicans. I believe they play Sacramento twice. They play Memphis once. I mean, there's different opponents there that are not as, let's say, as quality opponents as some of the teams that Miami is facing there. But I don't know that anybody can actually gripe about what's going on with the schedule here, because, again, it was a chore to kind of try and arrange everything. And I think that all the teams will be kind of facing similar levels of adversity here. That first game versus the Denver Nuggets will be airing on ESPN on Saturday, August 1st, so I know what I'll be doing that afternoon. The following game on Monday the 3rd airs at 1:30 p.m. on NBA TV, with the next two games versus Boston and Milwaukee scheduled for evenings on TNT. The games will be televised on Fox Sports with Eric Reed and John Crotty. So all 8 games will be covered by Fox Sports. Again, they'll have different crews covering them. From what we've heard is that people covering these games, broadcasters, will be doing so remotely. In effect, watching the same feed everybody else is and then kind of just talking over it. If you recall my interview with Eric Reed from just a couple of months ago, he talked about how he had done something similar when the finals were being broadcast on ABC or ESPN. And obviously, you had a team of, you know, Mike Breen and others, Jeff Van Gundy, et cetera, kind of commentating on those games. And then Eric would still practice and still record his own audio of, you know, what those finals games were like. And then the Heat and Fox Sports would use that audio for other purposes like commercials and things of that sort, or just general audio about the finals. So while he wasn't there in 2013, he was still kind of talking about the game six shot with Ray Allen, et cetera. So that was a fun interview and something you should kind of check out if you want to know what it was like for him to cover these games remotely. But at least we'll be hearing familiar voices when it comes to these games being played, as well as having national broadcast teams covering these games as well. So we'll have options. Again, the schedule is going to be all over the place. I mean, it's going to be a very strange 2 weeks trying to catch some of the games at 1 o'clock and then the following night at 7 o'clock and things of that sort. And it'll be interesting, if nothing else. I don't know, you know, what else we can say about the schedule. It's, you know, I found it interesting that it doesn't follow the same kind of pattern it had originally, that we were supposed to face different teams and things of that sort. Now it's a completely different system. I'm sure the NBA had their reasons for, because they had to kind of coordinate everything. You know, they had to kind of figure out who was going to play who. And I don't think that some of the conspiracy theorists are already kind of talking about the Pelicans trying to, you know, force their way in there, that the Rockets, I believe, have the easiest strength of schedule, giving an opportunity for James Harden to get to the finals, or at least have an easier path to get to the finals. Again, I don't know that there's any easy path here, considering all the different factors that are at play. And that's something that I'll definitely talk about in the next segment, because now that we know what that schedule is like, what does it mean for Miami? Again, I'll get into that in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. A Locked On Podcast Network stands against racism and social injustice. That's why we, the hosts, are making personal donations to local and national organizations that are fighting for change. And in the month of June, Locked On is matching a total of all host donations up to an additional $10,000. If you want to make your own donation along with us, please visit lockedonpodcast.com/Black Lives Matter. Look, I've got a toddler. He is a handful, let me tell you. He's a year and a half, a little bit over a year and a half, and he's running around all over the place, and he loves basketball, and he just doesn't stop. And I love every second of it, but let me tell you, it's a lot to kind of watch over him and take advantage of these years that are so precious now that we're at home and we're able to devote more time to him and things of this sort. But it doesn't leave a lot of time for other things. So if you still want to stay on top of your opportunity to read books, to stay enlightened, to kind of figure out the kind of information you need to keep growing, to keep changing, well, let me tell you about this app that I think would be perfect for you. It's called Blinkist. It's super easy to use. You just put it on your phone, your tablet, your web browser, and you can just take that time to either listen to or read books that are condensed, thousands and thousands of nonfiction books broken down into just 15 minutes. The key takeaways that you can read or listen to, tons of different titles from religion, communication, business management, self-improvement, anything you could possibly think of as far as, you know, nonfiction books are concerned, you'll have plenty of options. Again, tens of thousands of different books and more being added every day. Right now, you get unlimited access to read or listen to this massive library of nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. If you go to Blinkist, that's BLINKIST.com/NBA, you get to start a free 7-day trial, and you'll save 25% off your new subscription. Again, that's BLINKIST.com/NBA, so you can start a free 7-day trial and get 25% off, but only when you sign up at BLINKIST.com/NBA. So I'm trying to think of exactly how this schedule will play out, and my first instinct is to say it's a tough one. They kind of tweeted out something about that in effect, saying, well, it's going to be a tough challenge for Miami and everything else. And yes, on the surface, it certainly does look tough. Denver is a good team, at least we assume so. Milwaukee, Toronto, Boston, all the teams in Miami are facing are legitimately good. At least they were part of the playoff picture, with the exception of the Phoenix Suns, who, you know, they still can get hot. They have Devin Booker. They're getting DeAndre Ayton back to play at a pretty high level, assuming and theoretically. And that's the whole thing. So it's easy to kind of say, well, it's tough, loaded with legitimately good teams, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is no one has any idea what's likely to happen. How many teams will be playing well after a 4.5-month layoff? We don't know what the situation will be with these teams. There's going to be a rust factor. That is inevitable. You take the fact that, you know, summer league games or, you know, exhibition games to start the season, preseason camp, etc., all those games, they look horrible for the most part. You rarely get to go see a team play at a high level and go, wow, that looks really sharp. This looks like a great offense. There's such fluidity. Everybody's on a string defensively. All the different cliches that you can possibly consider when you talk about games. That's hardly the case. They look choppy. It looks ugly. You know, you have these high scoring games because nobody's playing defense, or conversely, you have these defensive quote unquote struggles where everybody's shooting 30%. I don't know where it'll be. It could be somewhere in between. I know you're going to have weeks of preparation both at home, and as teams are already playing in their home arenas and practicing at their facilities and things of that sort, and then traveling to Orlando in a couple of weeks where they'll begin practicing there. But that doesn't really matter. I mean, no one knows what it's going to be like. Again, after 4.5 months, and that's what we're looking at here, how will teams play cohesively? How are they going to be able to kind of get into the kind of mindset and things of that sort? It's very difficult to anticipate what the reality is going to be like. And no one, and I mean that. And I know you'll see a lot of prognostications. I think Bleacher Report in typical BR fashion has already said who wins out from this schedule, who loses, etc. Miami lost on the opportunity to face a lot of cupcake teams. I understand that. But every team in the bubble is going to be facing playoff teams for the most part. Even Houston that faces Sacramento that was just outside the playoff bubble, if the season had ended legitimately, still, you know, they still have some challenges. It's not like you're facing bottom-dwelling teams. You're not facing the Cavs. You're not facing the Hornets or other teams that are really, really struggling. You're facing teams, even the Blazers, that are sub-500, you know, you've got two superstars in CJ McCollum and Dame Lillard, and you also get, you know, Yusuf Nurkic back, you also get Zach Collins back, so, but look at their team. You get these players back from injury who have been out for a lot of the season, and yes, on the surface, it's easy to say, well, you're getting an infusion of talent back and things of that sort, but Nurk hasn't played all season. Collins played a few games and then was hurt for most of the season, so it's very, very unlikely to imagine that they'll be able to be inserted by Terry Stotts right away and they'll be able to have that kind of immediate impact. And similarly, they could see something happening like that playing out in Miami. Myers hasn't been part of this lineup for very long. He's been out for a few months. Similarly, we Tyler Hero. You know, is Jimmy Butler going to be able to come back and be at full strength? The assumption is that, yes, that will be likely the case, but it's going to be difficult. And there's also, aside from the rust factor, which is considerable and has to be taken into consideration, there's other things that are going to be playing into this. And there's the odd details and particulars of playing in this bubble. You've got, you know, teams being sequestered for the most part. Yes, sequestered in five-star resorts doesn't sound like much of a challenge, but it's a very different lifestyle. Like, players, especially older veterans, kind of get used to a routine. You wake up at a certain time, you eat a certain meal, you talk to certain people. If you're at home, you do certain things with your family members, wife, girlfriend, something along those lines. And then, you know, you kind of go to the practice facility, you do your shoot around at the same time. It's going to be very, very different. And I think it's going to have a toll on everybody. On top of that, you're also be playing in this arena that's going to be, for the most part, very, very quiet. It's going to be a soundless arena with very little personnel. There's going to be coaches wearing masks, players wearing masks on the sidelines. It's going to be a very different setup just from a dynamic perspective of being able to look across and see your team the way you have since high school, since college, since the pros, every year you've had in the pros. The benches will be set up differently. You're going to have rows of people to provide more spacings. And, you know, you're not going to be able to have full social distancing or anything like that, but you're going to have increased spacing. It's going to be a weird, just visual. I mean, for you to kind of look over to your bench and kind of expect to see things in a certain way, that's not going to be the case. You don't look up in the fan. I mean, look, think of every time Jimmy Butler hits a shot or flexes and kind of looks to the crowd. There's no crowd to look to. There's going to be like 30 media members kind of sitting there spaced out. Maybe there'll be pictures. We've heard theories that maybe the Disney Corporation will quote-unquote sell those seats to fans or Disney ticket holders or things of that sort and get their picture where they'll be put in the stand so that at least it'll look like a full arena. I don't know. That it's possible that these cardboard cutouts, could provide some kind of sense of realism, but either way, it's going to be a little bit odd. And again, I can't help but think about how severe this psychological toll will be without your family members, without, you know, being able to kind of see the same people you do, go to the restaurants that you do. You're going to be quote unquote stuck in Orlando in Disney World for the most part, and you just that's not gonna not for the most part. Excuse me, that you cannot leave, because at that point you risk being quarantined for another couple of weeks, and if you test positively and things of that sort. So there, it's gonna be very, very, very peculiar. And I also think that it's going to be impossible at this point to make a prediction. I just don't see how you can make an educated guess about these things, because all these teams, again, are good. They'll all be facing some level of adversity, and it could be different for a lot of these teams, but there's going to be some adversity, whether it's missing players due to injury. Look at the Suns, they're going to be missing Kelly Oubre Jr., or you could be also looking at all the psychological issues that I just laid out there. So every team is going to be facing some kind of issue. Whether it's Milwaukee, I mean, look at Giannis. He's going to be missing his newborn son and his girlfriend. And, you know, that's going to play some kind of factor. LeBron's going to be without his family for a few weeks. All these different things that you look at, you know, and it's going to be very, very challenging for these players to kind of re-engage, refocus, especially given all the other actual visuals and changes to an NBA lifestyle that they're going to be going through. So every team is going to be facing this, and so there's no way of knowing how one team is going to be able to bounce back better than not. My advice, and I'm far from an expert, the Heat should practice everything they possibly can to do to recreate what it's going to be like in the Orlando bubble. You know, just play on the actual game court. Right now they have a practice facility that's you know, near the America Airlines Arena that everybody goes to visit and sees games at. Stay away from the practice facility. Play in the big open arena. Get everybody to kind of build the floor out. I know you have to have arena personnel do that, but either way, you probably can arrange for that sort of thing. And just practice on these big empty arenas. Get used to what it's like to have all these kinds of this space, this empty noise, the kind of hollowed out effect. Play with no music, no crowd, a full court games with referees and coaches wearing masks and everything else, so that you can kind of train your brain. This helps. I mean, this is proven that your brain does work best when you have these kinds of things, you know, reprogrammed or pre-programmed into your way of thinking about a situation. I remember taking a psychology course where they kind of explained how if you study for a test in a particular way, and you recreate the same factors that went into your study session during the test days, you're more than likely being able to access that kind of information. Your brain works like a jungle, and that information is there always. It's just your ability to kind of clear the path. Think of that jungle being able to clear that path to access that information. You have to brush away and use your machete, your psychological cognitive machete, to kind of access that information. And so if you're able to recreate the scenario of what that Orlando bubble is going to be like, and then you kind of get into a more natural comfort zone, I think you'll be better equipped. And look, the Heat, you know, they're going to be looking at every opportunity to improve and take advantage of the situation. They're going to do everything they possibly can, but leave nothing to chance. That's their best chance of being able to go deep into the playoffs and contend for a playoff spot. Not just contend for a playoff spot, but contend for a spot in the finals. And I think Udonis Haslam said it best when he appeared recently on ESPN. Every one of these teams has a chance. You never know what's going to happen. It's going to be a lot like the NCAA tournament, where it could go down to a weird game. You know, and I know there's going to be a 7-game series, so it's not going to be quite the same thing. But either way, it's going to be a lot of weird factors kind of that could go into play here. And for Miami, if they're able to win out these eight regular season games, or at least get pretty close, they could be as high as a third seed in the Eastern Conference and potentially avoid Milwaukee until they match up in the Eastern Conference Finals. We'll see what happens. Bleacher is already kind of predicting that Miami is a kind of one and done, that they'll be able to win out that first round, and then after that they'll be eliminated. I still believe that they have everything available to them as far as talent, depth, and good coaching. And I think this plan to kind of recreate the scenario a little bit, get that psychological advantage, those benefits of being able to prepare for this, will really help go a long way there. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if they're able to kind of do something a little bit different to prepare for the bubble. If you go to a practice session, and of course most of you have not, I'm sure almost all of you have not, but practice sessions with the Heat are pretty loud, boisterous affairs. Everybody's kind of talking, shooting. There's five courts going at the same time. music blaring in the background, everybody's talking. No. You want to be able to create the scenario to the best of your ability, and I think that that's the kind of plan that you should go into it, and we'll see what happens. Either way, Derek Jones Jr. has tested positive for COVID-19. What does that mean for him and the Heat? I'll answer that on Locked On Heat. I don't want to put all the blame on my toddler son, Jacob, but at the same time, I'll be honest with you, it's difficult. If you're a parent, especially a parent of a young child, you know how hard it is to want to cook a full meal or take the time, even if you have that time, to take that time to use, to cook a meal or something like that. And that's why sometimes it's just great to be able to grab a protein bar that fills you up, is good for you too, and that's why Built Bar has been so convenient. I've talked about it for months now, but I'll keep talking about it because it's just been great for me and my family to be able to grab the tastiest protein bar I've ever had. 16 amazing flavors that you can choose from. All of them are covered in chocolate. They're all healthy. They're great for health conscious people. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. And again, 16 different flavors that you can choose from. You just grab them on the go, and that's the best thing you can possibly do. If you just want to take a snack or be able to have a short meal, a small meal in between different meals or something like that, Built Bar is the way to go. And believe me, you won't be disappointed. If you go to builtbar.com and you go to use the promo code Locked On, you'll get $10 off your first order. That's a great deal. Again, go to builtbar.com, use the promo code Locked On for $10 off at builtbar.com. A great tasting protein bar that's good for you too. So I'm a little hesitant to even talk about this, to be honest with you, because it just feels kind of dirty. I had recorded a podcast last week, if you all recall, where I kind of questioned why Derek Jones would even consider playing, considering his free agency and all the health risks and things of that sort. He's got a young family. There's an opportunity for him to make a lot of money next year, probably outside of Miami. And then the worst case scenario later on that day, I believe, or I think the day it posted, which I want to say is Thursday of last week, we found out, or maybe it might have been Friday. Either way, we found out that Derek tested positively for COVID-19, and he's asymptomatic. So technically he's okay, although we don't know about any kind of long-term impacts or effects or anything of that sort. But he seems to be okay. He says he's going to be doing whatever's necessary to quarantine, to, again, go through testing. And this is part of a bigger picture here where 302 players, I think that's the number that was reported by Adrian Wojnarowski, Woj, dropping the 302 players, basically all the active players that are going to be involved in the 22 teams that were going to be invited to Orlando. Of those 302 players, 16 tested positively. So you had a couple of other players here and there. And you had players still, opt out for whatever reason they might want. And just earlier today, I found out that Wilson Chandler has opted out from the Brooklyn Nets, and they've signed Justin Anderson, who was a free agent. In any case, it's going to be some weird roster turnover, but for Derek, it's unfortunate. And I know it's easy to kind of just jump on that and say, well, let's see what happens to him and how does that impact his free agency. And sure, those are concerns to be had for a later time. But I think for me anyway, you correct me or you can suggest something differently if you like. But I just think it's kind of gross to kind of think about that way because, his health is at play here. The health of his and his family is at play here. And so that's kind of my primary concern is how Derek is going to be able to bounce back from this. I hope that he stays healthy. I hope that he maintains that health and that he's able to maintain that along with his family. But there's no way of really knowing what the next step for him. And he might choose to opt out or not. Who knows? That's a possibility. He could still be able to do this, and Miami would then have an open roster spot here. I know that teams have some flexibility as far as being able to add players when it comes to a player opting out of the Orlando bubble. I think Derek is still likely to play. At least that's what he's indicated to reporters and the team. So we'll see how that progresses. It's just, I wanted to talk about that and also talk about something that Shams Charania of The Athletic reported, which is that apparently the NBA Players Association and the NBA are allowing players to use jerseys, an opportunity to put some kind of messaging or things of that sort in light or lieu of, using their last names in the back of a jersey. So theoretically, instead of Adebayo, you could see hashtag Black Lives Matter or hashtag Breonna Taylor or something along those lines. And there's no way of knowing what players are going to do, you know, what players are going to say and how they're going to say it. But in combination with these very real factors, and Derek contracting the COVID virus and other players around the league contracting it, it's just, it's very, very difficult. And I've talked about this before. It's been some time. I can't say that I just have to bounce back, but I feel like I have to impose blinders and just kind of just ignore these other realities around there. But as we're talking about the NBA and we're talking about games being televised and whether or not, you know, Miami's going to be able to knock off the Nuggets for that first game back on August 1st and everything else. I do want to talk about these things. Again, I talk about basketball or write about basketball for a living. I am as invested as in this as much as anybody. And so I do want to be able to get into these things, but I can't help but think that maybe we're not looking at the situation correctly, knowing that numbers are spiking all over the state, that we're going to be getting more and more positive tests, that it's likely to happen that some player, perhaps even a key superstar player on a playoff team, is going to be contracting the virus and is going to be forced into quarantine for a prolonged period of time. We're already, you know, Nikola Jokic already is. Who knows what happens next? And it's not to even mention, aside from anything coronavirus related, the fact that there is going to be a lot of, in my opinion anyway, a lot of shine and attention being taken off the Black Lives Matter movement. And I can't help but think that that's the case, that players can do more outside of Orlando than whatever they'll plan on doing in Orlando, wearing a t-shirt, wearing a jersey, addressing the crowd, or not the crowd, addressing the televised audience. All these kinds of things might be positives, they might be symbolic to some degree, but none of them the same effect as being able to do things differently, a protest and be a public figure against the brutality, police brutality and you know, systemic racism that these players and others have faced on a regular basis. But anyway, there's no right answer here. There's no right way of talking about this. It's going to be very confusing and difficult, and there's no way around that. But I did feel it was important to kind of address it. It's still a concern for me, and I think it's a concern for other media members, although not as much as I'd like. I think everybody's so eager to talk about basketball, cover games, and maybe even attend these games that they're forgetting all the bigger pictures. But every day we face more and more news of people complaining about masks or idiots being, complaining against protests or using racism as a shield for hundreds of years of oppression and brutality. When you think about all the terrible, terrible things that have happened to people over the course of this country's history, it's just hard to kind of focus on basketball. Even now, I find my mind kind of wandering as I'm talking about it, all these things, and it's very difficult, it's very challenging, and I apologize to some of you who don't want to hear about this because you're probably facing this sort of negativity on a daily basis, as am I, and there's also no way around it. You have to kind of address it. I have a platform, as some of you have pointed out, where I can talk about these things, and so I do, but I'll also, you know, continue to talk about basketball to the best of my ability. So thank you all for being such a steady audience. The numbers have been so consistently good, even though the season has been in the tank since mid-March. And I've tried to do my best to put out some pretty regular content there and didn't know what was going to happen over the course of the summer. So I didn't get to some of the topics that a lot of you had suggested early on when the season did end in mid-March. But either way, hopefully I'll get to those at some point, and hopefully it'll be in celebration of a Heat title, which would still make me very happy despite everything that's going on. Later on this week, I'll be talking about a documentary that ESPN is airing about LeBron James's decision. It's a decade after that decision aired, and it's something worth talking about. So I'm curious to see what that documentary talks about in terms of what went on behind the scenes. I'll also be breaking down the latest news and notes from around the league as the season gets ready to resume. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast right now on your favorite podcast app, and you'll get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Rommel, signing off and thanking you as always for your support. Yeah!
Back it up, D.